Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up. It's your poker magazine.
From the Ante Up headquarters in Tampa Bay, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now, here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's July 10th, 2015. You're listening to the best poker cast on the internet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
So we get to finally talk about this awesome poker
team. Women's soccer
TVA.
Team? Yes, absolutely.
No.
USA, USA.
Don't get us off on a tangent.
Well, it's World Cup, man. It's very exciting. But no, you meant the TDA summit. Right?
Yes, of course.
Very important summit, not as exciting as a women's soccer team winning the World Cup. But,
yeah, but still good, though.
But yes, for our poker listeners, they probably are far more interested in this than the World Cup, right? So yeah, as I mentioned last week, we're going to spend some time this week talking about some of the changes in poker TDA rules that came out of last month's once every 2 years meeting of tournament directors from around the world. And final rule language will be posted at pokertda.com. By September, probably even as early as August, from what I hear. But I guess just to be sure everybody understands what this is, the Poker TDA, short for Tournament Directors Association, is the volunteer group that got together years ago and decided, hey, we all need standardized rules for tournaments that hopefully every poker room around the country will use, or actually around the world, I should say. So when you go from your favorite room in your hometown to a poker room across the country, you should more or less expect the same experience.
Right.
At least from a rule standpoint, right?
Right.
So they do really good work. And I got to say this, the first time I attended was 2 years ago. Thoroughly enjoyed it. And then this year, obviously, we were a sponsor of it and I attended it. But I've also been talking to some of the board members even before that. So I've been involved somewhat with this organization for 6, 7, 8 years, right? Mm-hmm. They continue to impress me every time I go to one of these summits and see it. I mean, one, it's a volunteer organization. So that's pretty impressive that the board members spend as much time as they do not really making a dime off this. But this summit particularly, they did a really good job of showing folks how much they welcome suggestions, not only from the membership, the tournament directors that come up come out to Vegas for it, but they actually did a player survey this year, which was kind of cool to get the players' thoughts on a lot of different rules. They allow players to come into the summit and speak and offer their suggestions there, which is pretty cool, to an extreme, I think, at some point. And then this year they even invited Danny Negreanu to come and speak the first day, which is kind of rare to have a player actually invited to come specifically to speak. So they do a really good job of really trying to be sure that it's inclusive. And then one of the big things that we'll talk about the really controversial rule here at some point, and this will probably come back to that, but one of the things I really like to hammer home is this is not a dictatorship. They're not trying to dictate rules to folks. They are trying to get consensus on rules that everybody can, at the worst case, at least live with, right?
Yeah.
And so what they do is if they can't get what they think is an overwhelming majority of support for a rule, they just don't have a rule on it. You know, because they don't want to dictate to a room, hey, you got to do this if half the rooms in the country don't want to do it.
Right.
So all that, I think it's really makes it a really good organization, and I think any of us that play tournaments, you know, it's very hard to find a room now that doesn't at least say that they follow TDA rules, right?
Right.
So it's really made our player experience really great. So so that being said, the one thing that does concern me when I go to these summits is that I think they're almost too accommodating at times. So how this kind of works is they do a lot of prep work ahead of time and surveying members, and there's a forum that members, you know, throughout the year are putting suggestions and having discussions. And the board meets and they come up with suggestions that they think based on the feedback they've gotten, right?
Right.
And they put together a really nice PowerPoint, and then they essentially just go one by one through the rules. And when they get on a rule, they show either the suggestion changes or they're not making any changes. They just leave the rule up but still read it. And they have four or five runners with microphones that just run around the room. And if somebody has something to say about it, you get a mic and you get to say your piece, right, or long if you want. And then hopefully at some point the conversation gets to a point that they can take a vote or make a change or whatever, right?
Right.
And unfortunately, as it was in anything, there are some people that just like to hear themselves speak, right?
No.
I know, it's shocking, right? and now, and I like to say this too, I'm an, a very efficient person. I have a lot of flaws, I have a lot of advantages, but one of them I think is I'm an efficient person. I like to move quickly on things. Doesn't mean I don't like to take some time and really give some thought to things that deserve it. But for the most part, I like to get my point across, get other people's point across, and move on. You know,
it's one of the reasons we started the company.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, isn't it? I mean, really, how many times did we have to sit through 15 different meetings to see if we could actually just change a comma in a headline?
Right, exactly.
Right, so it's one of the reasons we did this.
Yeah, it's kind of like Dean Warmer. I'm like, all right, let's move on to the vote now. I think we've heard enough. So that's kind of my personality. So, and I know other people are different. So I'm not criticizing anybody, just my perspective on it. There were a couple of people that kind of dominated this summit, just like there were a couple of people that dominated the last summit. Yeah. And my hope is that we can get to a way where we can make those folks feel like they can still say what they need to say, but also remind them that, you know, hey, we all have opinions on every single rule. But not all of us get up and give our opinions on every single rule.
Right.
Pick and choose our battles, right? But nowhere was this more evident than in the most controversial part of the summit, which was about the first card off the deck rule. Now, I'll explain this because I don't think a lot of players actually got to experience this, which was part of the problem with the controversy. But 2 years ago, this was a discussion, and it was approved a change. So previously, if you were not in your seat when the hand was being dealt, as long as your butt made it to the seat by the time the last card off the deck, no matter where your hand was, right?
Right.
Last card off the deck was dealt, your hand was still live and you could act on it. Well, 2 years ago, one of the board members, Neil Johnson, who runs the Poker Stars live events in Europe, said, you know, hey, we've been experimenting with this thing in our events. It has live advantages. And what we've done now is if you're not in your seat when the first card is dealt off the deck, your hand is dead. No matter whether you get back there before the last card or before your last two cards or whatever, if you're not in the seat when the first card goes off, your hand is dead. So there was a lot of discussion on that, and people overwhelmingly decided, hey, let's give this a try. Turns out, over these last 2 years, that about half of at least the rooms that were represented at this summit never actually adopted this. Or they adopted it, and people complained pretty quickly, and they retreated and went back the other way, including the World Series of Poker, which never adopted it. And that's, you know, I don't know what you think, but it's probably one of the top 10 biggest tournaments in the world, right? So what they quickly found out this time when the discussion started on this, and let me back up. Professional players hate this rule. Okay. And have been very vocal about it, both on Twitter and live, and certainly at the summit they were. And their point is that poker is a social game. And when you can't get up to go rail your buddy at another table or see a friend at another table, it takes away from the social aspect. And they really, really, really hate this rule. I can't stress how much the pro players that I've talked to hate this rule.
Right.
So it was a topic again this time. And so when we started the conversation, it was very clear that a lot of rooms either never adopted it or backtracked pretty quickly. And that became a really good part of the discussion is, you know, what do we do with this? Do we change the rule because there seems to be a very vocal number of players who don't like it? Do we stick with the tournament directors that said, hey, I've tried it and it's fantastic. It actually is, for the it's very, some of the arguments that they like is that, well, there's no favoritism. You know, they said in the past, if you were, you could see some dealers, if Phil Ivey is coming back from the bathroom, some dealers might slow down the deal to be sure he gets there because they don't, you know, want to anger Phil Ivey, you know, right, or right. Scott Long was coming, they'd like, charge, right?
Yeah.
So it was more fair this way. And because of that, they're getting more hands per hour, they thought, because, you know, you don't have that slow down the deal, right? Also, it's a kind of a safety issue because, you know, we've all seen this in poker rooms, right? Somebody's coming back from the John and sees the deal, getting ready to deal. Hey, I'm here, and it's darting through there, you know, running into cocktail waitresses and things like that. So if you know as soon as they see the deal going that hand's dead anyhow, they'll take their time getting back, right?
Right.
And then they also mentioned that, you know, it's sort of a player integrity thing too, because, you know, it's possible, although no one admits that this is widespread, that I could be standing on one side of the table, peek at your cards when you're looking at it, right? And then walk over to my table and sit down before the last card, and now I know what you're at.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah. So those are kind of the issues that the people said that why it's a good thing. And I promise you I didn't time it, but this was easily 4 hours over the two-day session.
For this one topic?
One topic.
Wow. Oh, crazy, man. Right? Man, that is crazy. That is crazy. I mean, that's just... Wow. I bet you they didn't spend that much time on it to change the rule to first card.
No, it certainly wasn't. Yeah, certainly wasn't. Well, but, you know, and again, this is kind of what happens, right? If you have a rule that no one really knows about, they're like, eh, okay, whatever. We'll try it, right?
Yeah.
And then once you start hearing from customers, hey, I hate this rule. Now you have an opinion. You didn't have an opinion 2 years ago, right?
Yeah.
Because of that. So I get it. But it was a very interesting discussion to watch. You know, again, I think it was too lengthy for what it was. But it was very divisive there. And again, going back to what I said, that they don't like to dictate policy. So I give the board members tremendous credit. They try really, really hard on this to find a way for people to like kind of live together on this. And eventually what happened was the last poll was, hey, even those of you that prefer first card off the deck, can you live with last card off the deck? For a matter of consistency, so we're all consistent. And a wide majority said they could. So now it sounds like the actual language is the last card of the deck is going to be the preferred method going forward. So I guess still some wiggle room for rooms that really don't want to do it. Certainly the Poker Stars events likely will not switch. Neil Johnson's one of the board members, said he'd go back to them and ask them to change, but he didn't think that they were going to because they really are greatly in favor of the efficiency in the rule. So, but yeah, 4 hours on that. So, wow. Do you have an opinion? First card, last card?
I don't care. As long as I know the rule when I'm in the place, then the good thing about this is that you always have rule number one to go to. And so if they say, right. You know, why are you using first card off the deck? Well, for our situation, and it's our interpretation that we're doing what's best for the people in this room, first card off the deck is what's best for us. We don't want people getting hurt. We don't want people rushing back, you know, whatever. And then so they can always do that. So if it's okay to do that, if it's open to interpretation, then I'm fine with it. I always thought it was sometimes I think it's fun when you're playing, and this is a cash game situation, but you know, you see them dealing and you know it's like that, is he gonna make it? You know, is he gonna make it before that card gets there? You know, for me, it's kind of funny. But I really don't have a feeling either way. I do think that first card off the deck is the most efficient way and clear cut way to say you're not in this hand, and it's so obvious. Hey, I'm dealing, and you're not here. How am I gonna know if you're here or not? So to me, it's the perfect way to say, you know, to answer every question. Hey, but I was nope, sorry. I was dealing. The minute I was dealing, you weren't here. Your hand's dead. That's easy. There's no misinterpreting that. Whereas, but last card, you know, you could slow down the deal. No. I guess somebody could look across the room and see the dealer shuffling and start running and still have the same kind of situation because he hasn't dealt the card yet. But that's
true, but it's a little, now you got to be like a freaking gazelle.
Exactly. Right? That's what I'm saying. So
you have like literally seconds at that point to get
there. Yeah, that cuts it down.
Where the other one, you got, you know,
two times around.
20 seconds.
Yeah. Right? And so I think first card of the deck is ideal, but it's not ideal for a social situation, and I think I agree with the players on that, where, hey, you and I haven't lasted longer, and I want to go bust your butt for a second because I just want a big hand or something, and I can't do that now. Now I got to, yeah, oh, it's so rigid. And, yeah. So, yeah, but I think it, whatever room they want to do is fine. I don't think there should be a rule. I don't think it should be a rule at all, except it should be a rule that says, see the poker rules for this room.
Well, that's a good point, because when they got into this discussion, they had three options, really. You know, we could keep first card and, you know, try and encourage rooms to actually give it a try, which is kind of my point. I don't think a lot of players actually have experienced this, so they don't know whether they like it or not, right?
Right.
Or go back to last card, which will make, obviously, a lot of the vocal players happy, but rooms that are really enjoying using this and see it as an advantage, now they got to go back in time, in their opinion, right? Or just not to have a rule at all and let the rule individual series or rooms make their own decision. And, you know, I give Matt Savage and Johnny Grooms, a new board member, a lot of credit, because they really said, you know, hey, the reason we created the TDA is for consistent rules. And when we keep letting rooms decide what they want to do, then we're no longer, there's no longer any consistency. So that's why they really push hard for an actual rule of some sort, whether it's one or the other, that people can live with. And I get that. You know, obviously not every room adheres to every rule. So, you know, actually I think we got a comment on our Poker Radius Antioch forum. You know, hey, I'm in the room and they're not playing how I play home. Why is that?
Yeah.
Like, well, because it's a business. They do what they want to do, right?
Right.
Most part. So, yeah, that was kind of the discussion. I mean, I'm a first card guy. I was one of them that voted that we could live with the last card if we had to, you know, because consistency is much more important to me than the actual rule back and forth. Well, what I kind of got a little upset about was the players there, generally speaking, were professional players that were speaking. Obviously, if you're in the poker business, you're a player, right? So there are 200 players in that room. But the pro players kept saying players, and I think what they meant to say was professional players. But I really don't see in my local room where I'm playing a $40 nightly tournament a lot of discussion about first card, last card out the deck ever, right? I really just don't think recreational players care. But I'll tell you, from my personal point of view, I think it's a sign of respect to be in the seat when the hand starts.
Yeah.
I mean, I get the whole social, you want to go rail your buddy and that, and, you know, that's great. But nothing's stopping you from first card off the deck once you look at your hand, getting up and go over rail your buddy right then, right?
Yeah.
Obviously, it's a little bit more difficult, and I get the distinct difference. But we're talking 5-10 seconds is really what we're talking about. And it turned into a 4-hour discussion over literally 5 or 10 seconds. But, you know, I just think, you know, poker is a social game, but it should be social with the guys that are, and the gals at your table.
Well, I think
I mean, no one's keeping you from talking, having a conversation with the people at your table.
No, I agree with you too about, you know, the pro. But the reason why they bring up the pros is because that's what they do for a living. So they're doing that all day long, every day, and they're bored out of their minds. And they want to go, you know, at least make some of their day enjoyable, other than just making money. I can see that, and I can see how you say that the $40 nightly guy is showing up for 3 hours a week or every 2 weeks or something. So he shouldn't be considered when it. That, I mean, not that, but you know what I mean. It's not the same argument.
But that's my point. I just think it's a sign of respect to be in your seat. And if you can't be in your seat, and there's all kinds of reasons we're not in our seat. I mean, we got to go make the PP. We got to get a hot dog. You know, whatever.
Right.
You know, not all of us are going to make every hand, but you know, it's a sign of respect, I think, to be sitting at your table and actively engaged in the game at the table you're at. And I don't think it's too much to ask people to be at your seat when the first card's off, or forfeit your hand.
Yeah, no, like I said, I think first card off the deck is the clear-cut favorite for an official ruling. You know what I mean? There's no wiggle room in that. There's wiggle room in how long it takes you to deal two cards all the way around. Players can visually see that you're dealing and then run over. Whereas first card off the deck, hey, it's clear-cut. Like, you're not here. You're not here. I mean, how can I serve you dinner if you're, you know, in the bathroom?
Right.
I can't. So, same thing, I think. I don't know. But, yeah, it's funny. They took 4 hours. We took 18 minutes.
So I'm going to skip ahead here and move things around, because you mentioned how things are different in a $40 nightly tournament versus something else. And I thought that was kind of a theme that we saw this year, was that, and certainly some chatter I had with tournament directors in the hallway and some of the folks I talked to afterward, talking about now whether has poker's tent got so big now that it's hard for one set of rules to be used for all events? You know, obviously we're seeing the $1 million buy-in one drop event. There's a $500,000 buy-in event this year, right? Mm-hmm. Those are slightly different than the $40 nightly tournament, right, in your local room.
Yeah.
And I think this is one of those rules that seems like it's not dependent on the room that you're in, but dependent on the event and what kind of player that event attracts. Right? There's not a lot of Scott Longs or Chris Crescenzes in a $500,000 buy-in event, right?
Right.
That's going to be an event that's all pros, that all, you know, have money on each other or whatever and want to rail each other and that kind of stuff, right? Mm-hmm. In that case, whatever. If they want to, you know, last card off the deck, great, fine. But it might be different in a 40-hour nightly room. And so there was some discussion that whether we're getting to this point now where there's some rules that need to be split. Now, obviously, the danger in doing that is now when you start splitting rules, now it gets like a big bowl of soup, right? And you can't figure out anything anymore. So I think there's a lot of hesitation to do that. But it's an interesting question, you know, whether events now are drastically different. You know, I don't think we've seen this wide range in poker ever before.
Well, let me ask you.
$20 rebuy tournament and a $1 million buy-in tournament.
You think that this is sort of like the Jordan rules, where he's the best player in the world, and so there are different rules for him.
And, I know what you mean. Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so I can see that, but it doesn't sit well with me. It's the game, and it's the rules. And if you can't follow them, I don't care how much you're paying to do it, doesn't mean you should be able to buy yourself a better ruling. Oh, I'm paying $500,000 to play in this event. You better give me 10 minutes to talk to the guy I'm backing over there. No. I'm sorry, we're playing poker. You chose to play for $500,000. That's how I feel. I mean, I can see what they're saying, that, you know, they should. And a lot of times, too, if you have an event that big, they have their own tournament rules. Like, the World Series has its own tournament
rules. Well, yeah, we've seen. The World Series is straight on a couple things. I mean, the last card was one, but there's other things they did. They actually retreated on one this time, which everybody was happy for. And that's a good point, because part of the discussion is that, you know, if you're a poker player traveling for a tournament, you're traveling in the summer of the World Series, right?
Yeah. I mean,
it's the biggest tournament in the world. And it's very easy for players to come home to their home room. And this is the thing the tournament directors tell me all the time. The worst thing the thing they hate to hear from their players most is, well, that's the way they do it at the World Series. If it's good enough for the World Series, why can't it be good enough for Joe's Poker Room?
Yeah.
And then it gets into this whole, well, I can explain it to you, but, you know, so I think there's a lot of tournament directors that really wish that the big tournaments would just fall in line with everything and not have that problem. But at the same time, we know the World Series is the most unique event out there, right? So they're probably going to, there are going to be some things that should be different for them. But it's difficult, you know, because they talked about, you know, hey, you know, in college or basketball, you've got high school basketball, you've got college basketball, you've got professional basketball, and they're all the game of basketball is the same. You still got to get the ball in the hoop, right?
Right.
But there's different shot clocks, there's different rules for this and that, and it's geared towards those type of players. So there is precedent for it. It's just a matter of whether we want to take poker that route where, you know, hey, you're playing this size event, and you got this rule, and if you're playing this size event, you got this side rule.
Yeah, and you know, when you think about it, let's say the baseball players who make the most money, who are making $30 million a year or whatever, they don't get a smaller strike zone when they're at the plate.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's still the strike zone. It's still, you better keep one foot in the batter's box. It's not, well, I get paid $500,000 at bat, so I should be able to put both feet outside the box, take my time to adjust my gloves, no more Garcia Parra-like. And I'm like, no, you're just a baseball player, that's a box, this is a rule. So I don't think there should be two sets of rules. If you're going to have a $500,000 buy-in event and you want these players to be happy with the rules, you explicitly say, this poker does not follow poker TDA rules.
Just for this event.
Yeah.
Because of the clientele we have, we know this rule doesn't make sense for you.
Right. For this event.
Right.
But generally,
I think
you follow
fine,
poker
right?
TDA. Yeah.
That's probably
I think
better
that's
way
enough.
Of doing it, right?
Yeah.
Hmm. All right. Well, a couple other things quickly that were issues this year. A lot of discussion on delays at the table. And I think anybody that's been following Twitter, not just TDA, but tournaments in general, know that this has become a bigger issue with players tanking a lot more often than they used to and a lot longer than they used to. Now, obviously, we all know we can call the clock on anybody whenever we want, but, you know, a lot of players don't feel comfortable doing that, right? Because it's kind of a you feel like a jerk when you do it, right?
Right. You want to get your ass kicked in the parking lot.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. So, but because of that, I think players, there's some thought, I should say, not me. There's some thought among people that players are taking advantage of that by taking as much time as they take, an inordinate amount of time to make a decision.
Yeah.
And we're not talking, you know, final hand of the World Series for $10 million. We're talking whether to complete your small blind in round one, right? Stuff like that, right?
Right.
There really shouldn't be that hard of thought that goes into it. If there is, you're probably overthinking the game poker, right?
Yeah.
So there were a lot of discussions with that. And then they made a couple changes. One, now any player in the tournament can call the clock on any other player. So if you're at table three and the guy at table four is tanking, you can actually call the clock on them.
Wow.
Well, because again, remember, in tournaments, this is the difference between tournaments and cash games, is when you're a tournament, you have a vested interest in the entire tournament. So the shenanigans going on at one table, that actually affects you. Whereas if you were in a poker room with a cash game, you know, if somebody's over there, you know, betting quarter chickens, it doesn't affect you at all, right? But if somebody's doing something in the tournament table, you know, that's effective, you know, effectively affecting you. Yeah, look at that. That's kind of funny. And then also this is kind of interesting too, because there's a lot of maids or ifs or things like that in the rules, so it's not a hard fast rule on a lot of this stuff, but every once in a while they like to put in extra language just to clarify discretion, and they gave tournament directors wider discretion this time to crack down on players who they think are taking a tank too often or for too long. So, you know, some of the examples that some of the tournament directors have been doing is that, you know, if you get the clock called on you once, all right, clock call on you twice, all right, third time, now maybe you don't get that full minute, maybe now it's, hey, you get 30 seconds out.
Yeah.
And next time it's going to be 20 seconds, and eventually next time they call the clock, your hand's going to be dead before not even come over. You know, so I think it gets to this respect thing, which I was talking about the first card. I mean, and respect is hard to legislate, right, in anything, but it's kind of reminding players, you know, come on. The longer you take to make a decision that's not really a decision that needs to take, is more time that comes off the clock and fewer hands you get out. And right now, generally, players are pushing for longer structures and more time, which is costly to a room, right? So the net result of people tanking forever at the table now is that it's going to force rooms to either make structures less player-friendly or charge more rake. And those are two things that I don't think any player really wants,
no,
right?
No.
And surprise, surprise, surprise. Verbalize.
Hang on. You should have brought up the delays thing before the first card off the deck. I might have changed my mind now. If somebody can call a clock on me at another table, then that means that guy's getting up off of his table and coming over to my table. He might be less inclined to do that if it was first card off the deck.
There you go. So I really don't think anybody, this is going to be a big issue. Right? I mean, there's going to be a couple jerks that probably want to do this.
Oh, right? I'm going to be one of them.
Of course.
Wait, oh, yeah, on our cruise. I'm going to be like, see Scott over there? I'm calling a clock on him right now. I don't even know what's going on, but I want a clock on Scott.
Sorry, Scott. You have a minute for that. Congrats.
Sorry, you got a minute. Thank
you, Chris. all right, well, like I said, surprise, surprise, surprise. Verbalize. Players not verbalizing their action continues to wreak havoc in tournaments. And aside from the first card, last card, most of the time spent was how do you deal with people that don't say what they want to do. So they ended up doing some rule clarifications to fix that. And I should say, if everybody can go to our homepage, antiupmagazine.com, you'll see a list of all the rule changes as well, too. So we're not going to go through all of them on the show.
Right.
But you can go through and see that. And then obviously there's a link to pokertda.com where you can actually see the current rules as well, too, and see the differences in them. But there were a lot of discussion about this. And really what it comes down to, and a lot of us are shaking our heads, like, just tell people to say what they want. You know, because a lot of it's guessing, and what people, tournament directors, don't want to get into is guessing. And actually, our call to the floor of this issue is part of that. You know, when you're asking a tournament director to read your mind or guess what you're doing, that puts that person in a terrible spot, right?
Yeah.
So if you just say, I raised to 500... No matter what you do with your chips, if you accidentally spill them or whatever, or if you don't understand the action, people know what you're intending to do, and then it makes things so much easier. So much easier. But, you know, there's a lot of players that don't want to say things, and that causes a ton of trouble. So Until we can get people to start talking more at the table. Hey, poker's a social game, by the way, if you haven't heard. It's going to continue to be, these rule books are going to get bigger and bigger and bigger, unfortunately, I think.
Isn't it funny that a lot of the stuff that we're talking about right now is stuff that we've talked about on the show, even probably recently? Oh, I mean,
yeah.
It's remarkable. All these issues are stuff that we've encountered with our Call to Four or with anything else, and it's just it's funny. It's ubiquitous. I mean, no matter what you do, everyone comes up with these situations.
Well, and the problem is when you have these avoidable problems, I call them, they detract from the real problems. I mean, there have been some Call to Fours on our show, right, where we get done reading and we're like, yikes, I'm glad I wasn't the tournament director I had to make
it.
Right?
Yeah.
Because it's really, there's no winning in it, right? It's just a brutal situation. And that's really what I want my tournament directors focused on, is really having the time to think and make a right decision there. You know, I want my pilot to focus on landing the plane and taking off the plane, right?
Right.
You know, if he needs to go take a wee-wee at 30,000 feet, do it. You know, I trust the plane, it's going to be all right there. You know, same with here. I don't really want the floor to be called over to interpret what stupid bet you were trying to make because you didn't say anything.
Yeah.
If we can get past that, then I think a lot of this becomes a lot easier. But, you know, human nature, right?
Well, I mean, they could change the game. They could say everything has to be verbalized. And then you have to say what you're doing every single time, and then eliminates this
problem. That's actually an interesting point. I don't think it would ever fly, but that is a solution.
Right, yeah? That's a solution. Unless you have some imperative, you're impaired somehow, and then you'd have a reason not to. But other than that, there's really no reason to not verbalize unless you're afraid to give up something. But then, hey, that's what the skill of poker is being able to control that and have people be able to read that, you know? Maybe just have them say it all the time. I don't think it'll ever come up like you said, but that could be...
Yeah, I think it's a tradition thing now. It's a little typical. And I'll give you a good example. One of the things... actually, I don't think it actually made it into the summary that I did. Let me go back and do that. But they did have a talk about what's the proper way of checking. You know, because it's obviously it's accepted now by tapping the table as a check, right?
Right.
What happens if you tap your shoulder or your arm?
I know. I've seen it too. You have the guy that arms crossed.
Is that a check or is that just a nervous twitch?
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's crazy.
So I think they actually, it was touching the felt now, so you can't check now by tapping your forehead.
But there'd be no mistaking it if you said it.
Right, exactly. So that's the kind of thing. But you know, to your point, I guess, and I'm totally in favor of a verbalized rule, as ridiculous as it would be. But yeah, if somebody said, okay, we're going to do that, now you're going to say check, it would take me a while, I think, to get used to not tapping the table, right? Because that's just how I check, right?
I guess.
There's very few times that I'll say check. And usually when it does, I'll give you a tip that you've been playing with me. It's probably a tell. If I actually say check, that means I had nothing. I give it up on the hand, and I'm too lazy to even tap the table.
To even move your hand.
Check,
yeah.
Whatever. Yeah, sure, check.
Oh, man.
Oh, that'd be interesting. All right, and then this last part I thought was very interesting. We've had this discussion a lot, right?
Yeah.
You know, people claim the rule is that if you're the last to act in the betting round, the final betting round, and you have the solitary nuts, we're not talking about a high-low game or something, but solitary nuts, and you do not bet, you are subject to penalty because it's soft play, right?
Uh-huh.
Heard this, right? Turns out that's not a rule at all for the TDA. Didn't know that.
There's no soft play rule.
Well, there's a soft play rule, but it doesn't specifically say that checking the nuts is soft play.
No. Oh.
So they had a brief discussion about whether they needed to add it, and thankfully it was very brief and moved on. So it's actually a rule. Now, that's not saying that if you check the nuts in your poker room, the tournament director comes over and isn't going to give you a penalty for it. So don't tell that tournament director, hey, Scott and Andy upset. It's not a rule.
Yeah, because that...
They want, but...
Yeah, that's what soft play is, though. Right, so I mean, essentially, there is a rule for it, but you're not specifically calling it the nuts
exactly.
that you're checking.
Soft play, it's a big tent word.
Yeah.
You know, there's all kinds of stuff that can go in it. And really, it comes down to a tournament director's discretion on all this stuff.
Yeah.
And that was actually part of the good discussion is that this came up a lot. Again, is I can't stress how much the board members of TDA are really on top of things, too. You know, they were hammering home, hey, if this rule, who is this rule intended for? Is it the recreational player that's just coming to the poker room? Are they the ones that are going to be subject to this rule more often than others? If that's the case, that's not a good reason. Because now we're going to make the game unfun for them, and we're going to embarrass them, and they're not going to come back. If this is really a problem, then that's a different story. Yeah. But one of the things was, it came up during this discussion, you know, maybe a recreational player just said, I'm not going to bet on the end. I got the nuts. I'm not going to get the guy. The guy's not going to call me, right? And now all of a sudden he gets a one-round penalty.
Yeah.
You know what? I'm going to go golf next week. accidentally exposing your cards, you know. Because in home games, people do that all the time, right? I fold, show what I have. One round penalty. What? Really?
Yeah.
Now, what they did remind tournament directors are that there are no automatic penalties anywhere in TDA. So if you don't want to give somebody a penalty for something that you think is accidental, you don't have to give them a penalty. Or you can give them a warning, you can give them a one-hand penalty. There's all kinds of latitude you have. And that was actually a good discussion because I think there are some tournament directors that take this stuff as gospel. And, I played in rooms where you expose your cards ever, it's a one round penalty.
Yeah.
No discretion at all. And I think that's a terrible rule because we've all sometimes went to fold and, you know, somebody just opened the door or something and a gust of wind came and now my cards fly over and now I get a one round penalty because of Mother Nature.
Because of physics?
Yeah. Come on. So that was a lot of discussion as well, too. So it'd be interesting. But definitely, like I said, go to antiupmagazine.com. We have a post up on our homepage right now and you can read the rules and, let us know what you think about them.
So, you know, there was something else going on in Las Vegas that was pretty near and dear to our hearts. Would you agree?
A lot of news going on, and we're not talking about the World Series, which we will be in a minute, but our Antioch Poker Tour event at Golden Nugget ended. Christian Francia of Bayonne, New Jersey, and I only know Bayonne because we took a cruise out there.
Took a cruise out there, exactly. I always think of that now.
But he is a champion of our main events at Golden Nugget Las Vegas. 1,330 players in the main event, Chris. Pretty impressive.
Yeah, that was awesome.
And so he won the title. He got $89,000. I think there was some sort of deal made at some point there. He also had a seat in our Ante Up World Championship, and he's going to appear on the cover of the August issue of Ante Up. So very excited that we had a great event at Golden Nugget, and hope to be back out there next year. But next up for it is that Ante Up World Championship. It's going to be at Thunder Valley Casino Resort near Sacramento, California, July 27th through August 10th. I'll be out there for most of it, so come out and say hi. Go to antiupmagazine.com/worldchampionship for all the details on that. And while you're on our website at antiuppokertour.com, you can find out more about the Pearl River Poker Open. There's also an Ante Up Poker Tour event being held at the Pearl River Resort in Mississippi. That'll be October 1st to 12th, so those are the next couple events coming up.
And here's a quick update on the case of Brian Mikan. He said, he's the founder of Seals of Clubs. He had faced charges for running an unlicensed poker site we had talked about a couple of times in the show. He pleaded guilty to a lesser charge to avoid jail, and he'll be on probation and forfeited property, including three Bitcoins. I think that's pretty funny. I don't know. Is that funny?
That's why I put it. I didn't want to, bloat the show notes with all the stuff.
Yeah, that's funny, though. Three Bitcoins.
It's a Bitcoin site, and they actually took three Bitcoins, which were, they found them in the couch cushion. They don't really exist.
Oh, man.
And they're only worth, $200 or something, or each, I think, right?
So it's just funny. It's like, you're taking that Bitcoin from me, buddy.
You're not getting it back.
Not getting that Bitcoin back.
What's that in your hand? You can't see it. It's a Bitcoin. But I'm taking it. All right, well, the World Series is through the main event now. We got some fun stuff to talk about that here, but we'll catch you up on some of the other events that we haven't had a chance to catch you up on. Jamie Gold made his deepest run since winning the main event in 2006. He finished fifth in a $1,500 no limit hold'em event. Anthony Zinno, I'm a fan of this guy. And not just because he's been on a cover of a magazine, but he really is a phenomenal player. But he's a World Poker Tour Player of the Year right now. He made his fifth final table series and went on to win his first bracelet in what turned out to be the richest pot limit Omaha tournament in history. And he's now in the running for World Series Player of the Year as well, too. Wow, talk about it. Incredible.
Man, I tell you, he went from hoarders to richest PLO tournament in history. Remarkable.
Just 33 years old, folks, too.
Man. Wow.
And Anthony Spinella is the champion of the first online World Series of Poker bracelet event. And then we're in the middle of the main event right now. Where right. A lot of our friends are out there playing right now. I'm getting updates on Facebook and Twitter, and it's really great. So good luck to it'd be great to see some Ante Up Nation people go deep in this, or maybe even win it. That'd be awesome. But they attracted 6,420 entries this year, and that really is statistically just a hair fewer than last year, so about the same. So if you're thinking that the online poker out there was going to create a second rush, it doesn't seem like that happened, right?
Mm-hmm.
But all final table finishers this year will earn at least $1 million. The champion gets $7.6 million, I believe. And that's the lowest since Joe Hashem won in 2005. And it's probably a product of the deeper payouts this year that ensure that 1,000 players will be walking away with money.
Yeah, that's definitely it. I mean, because there's no reason it's exactly the same as last year to people less unless they made a flatter payout schedule. So
yeah,
that's definitely it.
Well, it's kind of interesting because, I mean, obviously we'll have time to wring our hands over why this number's not bigger this year. But yeah, you would think that with the online, which is obviously very small, but that would probably boost some numbers somewhat, I would think, right? And then I really think this 1,000 cashers thing, I think that was a big deal. I think that made, you know, I guess there's not a lot of players like us that are on the fence whether we want to put $10,000 of our money down or not to play this, right? And go, oh, wow, hey, if I make it to the top 1,000 and get my money back, I'm in. But I would think that's probably a selling point, right?
Yeah, I mean, in this case, it'd be one in six players. You know, I mean, it's not terribly difficult. You know what I mean? I'm just saying you have to outlast five other guys or gals, and it just seems to me that would be a reason to play, not a reason not to play.
Right, yeah. Right? So, yeah, I guess those are the reasons I'm surprised it's not more. I wasn't certainly guessing 10 or 12,000 or something ridiculous like that this year. But
I think I did say we could expect 10. I thought with you know, Atlantic City getting involved, I thought we could have expected 10. I was shocked that it's not even as much as last year. That's kind of shocking to me. Maybe it has something to do with the Colossus.
Good.
You know, maybe guys entered that thing a lot, and I don't know, maybe something like that, such a big event, or maybe it just could be that there's just so many tournaments out there. You know, it's just, it's reached a maximum velocity or whatever, you know?
Right, yeah.
Who knows?
All right. And then, this is my favorite story, probably of all time. The main event suffered, get this, a rain delay this year, Chris.
What?
City where rain is scarce. A monsoon blanketed Las Vegas, and it opened up a leaky roof in the Brasilia Room. And so they had to move 23 tables to the Amazon Room during a dinner break. And if you look at some of the pictures that people posted on Twitter, it's just like in a leak at a restaurant. They had a trash can sitting out there right on seat six, right, to collect the rain from above. I mean, who would ever think? I mean, I was out there for 26 days this summer, I think. Right,
yeah.
And one day there was a rainstorm, and it was the most magical thing I've ever seen out there. So I don't think I've ever seen rain in my entire lifetime of going to Vegas. And I saw it; it came down really hard. I'm like, "Wow, this is great!" And it lasted like 20 minutes. And done.
I mean,
and
makes sense.
A couple weeks later, boom! Literally a monsoon.
It makes sense. It's a leaky roof. I mean, you never know. How would you know?
Yeah, exactly. Right.
You know, that's hilarious. I saw snow in Vegas.
Did you? Really? Well, yeah, I've actually seen snow, too.
Okay.
I've been there in December when my wife and I were planning our wedding. And that was weird, too, though, because you think it's in the desert, right?
Yeah.
I don't think it gets cold, but it does get cold.
Yeah, it gets cold.
But, wow, rain delay. Can you imagine that? I'd be just looking at it. Because here's the thing. I mean, I don't know when the rain started or the clouds started, but it's theoretically possible that there were people, certainly there were people that stayed at the Rio, right? Probably. We're just sitting there at the table, and all of a sudden, what the heck? No idea, right? That water's just coming out of the ceiling. What could be causing that? Must be a pipe broke. Nope, rain.
Oh, man.
In Vegas.
That's crazy. All right, any updates? One last reminder that cardplayerclub.com is hosting a free roll on July 11th, so you better get going because today's the 10th, with an Antiup Cruise package for the top prize. For details, visit AntiupCruises.com and click on the Tampa link. Also, Dover Downs in Delaware will host the first Antiup Set Sail Series September 3rd to 7th. At the first break in each of the five events of the Delaware Poker Championship, an Antiup Cruise package will be raffled off at the first break, with all players in the tournament or in the cash game getting a ticket. Visit AntiupCruises.com for more information. So that's cool. So you got to just be in the room, right?
Yeah, it's actually a really interesting way to do it. We set up the Set Sail Series package, so you know, they take the cost of the cruise out of the prize pool and give it to the winner, and then, you know, the normal payouts, right? But they decided to do something different here. They're going to actually use their promotional funds so nothing comes out of the prize pool. And they're inviting people that aren't even in the tournament. So, you know, by doing it the first break, you know, it's early on in the tournament when a lot of people are there, which is good, so you're rewarding players. And the fact that if you're in a cash game, you're still qualified. So, you know, if you're in that, if you get knocked out before that first break, it's not like you're not out of the running, right?
You jump into
a cash game, and you're still eligible. So, yeah. Love our folks up there at Dover Downs. So, folks, please go check that out and support that room.
Cool. All right. Each week we spotlight a listener who called our hotline at 206-338-6344 or emailed us at podcast@antiupmagazine.com. And if they haven't won something from us in the past year, just like we do with Call the Four and Hand of the Week, we send them something cool. It comes from Jay Grimes. He wants to know our thoughts on folding King-King preflop. He said he had a recent scenario in a 1-3 cash game where he opened for a raise of King-King, was raised, he 3-bet, and then got 4-betted. So we moved all in, and the guy shows aces and says, "Didn't you know what I had?" I ended up flopping quads, and he goes insane. Don't I have to give him some credit for having Jack-Jack or Queen-Queen or Ace-King there? Or just making the play? I tell you what, I don't remember the last time I ever folded King-King in a 1-3 game. Ever.
Yeah.
You know, if I'm playing for, you know, if it's 10-25 no-limit hold'em and I got $4,000 in front of me, maybe I could do it. But most of the time, when you watch me in a poker room, I've got about 100 to 300 in front of me, and I can afford to make that mistake once in a while.
Well, not even that you can afford, it's just that players are less sophisticated than
I was getting to that.
So, back to his point, all right. Jack, queen, queen, anything. I could see that in a low-level game, probably not a bigger game, but, yeah.
Plus, it depends on my what persona I've been reflecting the whole game. This guy doesn't believe me. He could totally do that with Jack or Ace King. Thinking that I'm just being a bully or something. It depends on how I'm playing that day. So, yeah, I would definitely give him some credit for that, depending on who you were at the table that day. And like I said, people sometimes think their hand is fantastic when they don't even understand what their hand is. You know, they'll be like, "Oh, look at this. I got 10-10. This is great." No, it's not. You know, so no, I have folded King-King preflop, but I've done it online in big tournaments. And, once or twice in a cash game, I've done it online. Just, you know, I'm playing something online. Like online plays bigger to me than, you know, it just seems bigger to me. I know when we play in live, the raises are bigger than they usually are online, but it just feels like a bigger game to me when I'm playing 2-5 online or something. When I was playing, I don't play anymore, obviously. But I have folded King-King preflop before.
I guess the other thing I'll say, too, is all that. I totally agree with all that. I will say, though, when we're talking the fifth bet,
yeah,
at that point, maybe I got to think, boy, this guy's really making a play now.
Yeah.
This is why we get to this point. So, yeah, I would say in this case, if his opponent's listening to the show, yeah, I probably would have mumbled under my breath, didn't you know what I had? But that's it. I'd be happy, though, right?
Yeah, no, you want him to do that with King-King. You still want to lose the quads.
Yeah. Right, yeah, exactly. But, yeah, I would say, you know, if we're talking raise, re-raise, and the third raise, all in, all right, maybe not ace-ace. But now we're talking the fifth bet. At that point, I got to think the guy's got aces, right?
Yeah, he 4-bet, and then we moved all in for the fifth bet. But that's still a fourth bet. That's huge. Because you raise, you're the open raiser. He raises you. Now you come back on top, then he comes back over. It's a cash game, too. It's not like it's some antics in a tournament. I mean, we're talking, this is cash, so, yeah, I mean, I think you still could give him, you know, some sort of credit for something else. It comes down to the table and being there. I can't make a definitive ruling on what that guy was playing, but yeah, I mean, you're right. By the time it gets to us making the 3-bet and him coming on top for a 4th bet, yeah, you might want to consider it at that point. But at that point, there's so much money out there.
Right. I don't know how much you have left in your stack.
Yeah. So
maybe that last bet's probably irrelevant at that point.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah.
But if that's the case, then I would say, I know what you had, but, I mean, what do you want me to do at this point?
Yeah, exactly. I'll take the 8-1 that out. I'll take the 8-1 that I flop a set. You know, whatever. All right, find yourself in a situation at your favorite poker room or home game and you're not sure what the proper ruling should have been, email us at podcast@antiupmagazine.com and we'll have Snoqualmie Casino Director of Poker, Elliot Schechter, tell you how he would have ruled. This week's sponsor is PokerRadius.com, poker's newest social networking site and home to the Annie Up group discussions comes from Mr. Quimper.
Love that name.
He says, the flop had three suited cards, and I was first to act. I said, quick suit check. And as I peeked at my cards again, the dealer says, check, and moves on to the next player. I questioned this since I was checking my cards, not my action. The four was called, and he backed the dealer's decision. Is this valid? Does this account for all poker words used in a sentence, obviously not in the context of your action?
All right, Elliot says, if I was dealing this game, or I were the floor person making the decision, I would have counted this as a check, too. Most floor decisions are based on the following principle. If you put me in a spot where I have to read your mind, you cannot win. The only part of your statement that was truly clear was check. Quick suit check could also have been understood to mean that since the flop came down all one suit, you couldn't check fast enough. Improbable, maybe, but not implausible. Your words in this situation were ill-chosen.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, it is kind of weird. There have been times where people have said stuff like that, and you're kind of like waiting to see what's going to happen, and then, you know, whatever happens. But, yeah.
I'm always worried about, and waiting for this to happen at some point, is when someone checks at the other table, right? And they go, check? You know, questioning? Did you check?
Yeah.
I can see Mr. Quimper coming back saying, hey, whoa, that's a great example, Scott. That's a check. That's not a check, but this is a check. But other than that, I'm going to agree with Elliot here too. And it's unfortunate because we go back to what we talked about at the top of the show about, you know, recreational players, and you're out to have, it's a social game and you want to have fun. And I'm sure Mr. Quimper, this is the kind of stuff he does in his home game all the time, right? We all would do it. Hey, quit suit check. He's just being funny, right? The problem is, though, that, you know, it's got to be clear what you're doing. So if you want to be funny at the table, make sure you're being funny without using any poker words.
Yeah, you know what? It just occurred to me, there was a time, and I don't want to make this any longer than I have to, but there was a time, I think, where a guy was in the 10 seat, and his cards were in front of him, and I think that was the one seat that he was questioning something, and I think he said, did he fold? But he didn't say, did he, loud enough. So all the dealer heard was fold.
Fold, yeah.
And he grabbed his cards. And then the guy's like, what are you doing? He's like, you said fold. He said, no, I said, did he fold? And he said, well, you know, you said fold. He's like, no. And then they got to get a floor. And the floor said, well, you didn't protect your cards. And you said fold, blah, blah, blah. And I think that's what happened. You can't read his mind. But he didn't. You know what I mean? He asked if somebody was folding.
Yeah. Well, the flip side of that is, and I'm not suggesting anybody's going to ever do this, but the proper way to ask is, what is the action to me?
Yeah, I know.
Then you're not saying fold, check, call, right? You're not saying any of those words.
It's just a reactionary thing.
It's going to get the solution, the answer that you're looking for without putting yourself in danger.
Yeah.
Obviously, that's, you know, you're going to sound like a robot when you say that, generally speaking. But so there's the solution to that as well, too.
Yeah.
But
it's just reactionary. You know what I mean? You look up, oh, did he fold? You know what I mean? You just kind of like, did he fold? You're asking a question, and then all of a sudden, boom, your cards are gone. You're like, what? I think in this case, it didn't matter. The guy was probably going to fold anyway, but it just seemed... It's interesting what you hear. If you only hear the last word, like with this one, quick suit check. Did he fold? Same kind of thing. And yeah, but too bad. It's too bad.
It's all like the yo example we had.
Yeah.
You know, I was very clear what yo means. Well, I was not. I mean, it's clear that quick suit check was just a funny thing I was saying as I was checking lane. Well, it might be, but the floor has to decide.
Can't read your
what
mind.
Your intent is, and
yeah,
don't know what you meant.
All right, we got a brand new O'Malley's move here. Here we go.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week, we're in the same 2-5 casino cash game and sit with about 700. About 3 hours have passed since the last hand with that opponent, and he has definitely seen some ups and downs. He got his stack to 1,200 before losing a couple of heartbreakers and having to reload. He currently has 300. He also got a seat change to turn his luck around and currently sits directly to our right. Other than this opponent, the rest of the table action hasn't changed much. It's still pretty timid. The blinds post and it's folded around to our villain in the MP who raises to 20. He's no longer playing as tight as he was previously and has made some questionable raises lately. We're on the hijack with the 9 of clubs, 8 of clubs. We decide to make the call with a fitter fold plan. The rest of the table folds, and my, does the flop fit. the Jack of Diamonds, 10 of Clubs, 7 of Clubs comes down. We flopped the nuts with a redraw to a flush or a straight flush. We could not have asked for more than that. With about $40 in the pot, our opponent checks to us. A little suspect, but at this point, we don't really care. We put in a value bet of $20. Our opponent thinks for a while before carefully putting $20 into the pot. The turn is the 5 of clubs. So close. For a split second, I thought it was the 6. Once again, our opponent checks. With $80 in the pot, we no longer have the nuts, but we're still in value bet mode. We make it $50 to go. Our opponent wastes little time in shoving his remaining $260 into the pot. Talk about an overbet. So, is he tilting? Does he have a better flush? Or is it something else entirely? What's the move?
It's time for Hand of the Week! Send your hands or situations to podcast at antiupmagazine.com. This one comes from our one of our favorite pilots, Todd Falstead.
Yep.
And he was out in California playing in an interesting game, and I don't want to spend too much time talking about it, but it's a no-limit kill game. Now, have we talked about this on the show before? Because he sent this to me once and asked me whether I've ever seen this, and I was like, no.
Yeah, I don't remember ever being...
Please go back out and get more information on this, and he did. So he came back. So essentially, I guess, I don't know how you get to the kill here. I'm going to guess it's...
Like the size of the pot?
Hold'em kill game where you have to win 2 consecutive pots, but I don't know for sure.
Mm.
But you have to put in a $4 kill bet now, right? Now, this is a, I believe this is a 1-2 game, so that kind of makes sense. Yeah, so that makes sense. The normal kills are doubled, right? So that part makes sense. But now the interesting thing is now if you want to open the betting, it has to be at least 8. You can't call that $4 kill bet.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Right. All right. And there's also a little weird thing where he mentioned the hand before that it was a promotion going on. Their table was chosen, and they dumped a bunch of money on the table for the pot, and they had to play that hand 4-8 limit.
Oh, wow. That's funny.
So, yeah, so that's kind of where we are now. But all right, so in this particular hand, he says, in the middle position, the other gun player has his standard $4 kill bet in. So it's a kill pot now, right? Whatever okay. That means here. And a player he calls Mr. Bluetooth goes beyond the required $8 to open. He sets out 4 stacks of 4 chips, which is a total of $16 individual chips, which he counts out with all the dexterity and precision of an accomplished career blackjack dealer. So it's $16, right?
Okay.
16 chips in.
Okay.
All right, and we look down at King Jack of Spades. I assume we're kind of a latish position. It's the kills.
I just don't know. I just don't love that hand. I don't like that hand at all. Ever since Danny Negreanu told me that it was called the rookie hand, because rookies think it's great and it's crap. I just don't like that hand. I mean, I like that hand if I'm going up against the blinds and I'm in position. But if I got somebody in a kill, so it's a bigger game than it started out to be.
16 now.
Yeah, now he's betting 16. I got King Jack. I mean, what are you hoping for? That it has to be spades? And, oh, by the way, hope the ace of spades is out?
Right.
You know,
right.
So you're making the nut? I mean, I just don't like this hand, to tell you the truth. I'm not saying that I'm...
You don't have to lie to me, Chris. Tell us what
you're... I don't like the hand. I'm going to fold. Sorry, I'm going to fold. So I like when I fold before the flop, because then anything I say after this, hey, can't hold me accountable for it.
No, I'm going to agree with you here. I mean, this is a hand. I mean, a low-limit game like this, I might take a flyer every once in a while because you might catch somebody with a queen-high flush and be able to stack them if flop goes right. But that's only if it's a small bet that I'm going to call. But at this point now, we're playing 1-2, and it's $16 now, so it's an 8x raise with people still to act, including a killer behind me.
Yeah.
This could be very expensive pre-flop. And really, to quite honestly, 16 is already too expensive for this hand for me.
Yeah.
Let's throw this away and wait for another one.
Yep. Okay, have a good show.
All right, now we're here to decide that it's well worth a call and ponies up the $16, but I can't do it without the panache of Mr. Bluetooth. Obviously, he has some description in this email earlier, so people have to imagine what Mr. Bluetooth is.
Yeah.
I don't think it's a problem. Pretty easy, right? All right, the dealer quickly recounts my call, followed by that eye-roll thing that they do so well. We see two additional callers, a late position guy in the number one seat whose range to the session was just about any two cards. He wore a beret and beady little granny glasses. He never made eye contact and played at least every other hand. The other loosey-goosey caller was the under-the-gun kill guy. He, too, had shown a propensity to play about anything, but he had yet to show down much. One of the reasons I think artificial intelligence will never beat poker is my perception that regardless of how much time you sit at a given table, there's always that player that, by hook or crook, never seems to give you much information. When he does, it's occasionally misinformation. So that's the profile of our kill better this hand. We really have no idea what's going on with this guy, right?
All right.
All right, so we go to the flop four-handed, 68 in the pot minus the rake. And the flop, as he says, is a very wet 8 of spades, 9 of spades, 10 of diamonds. He says, I nearly lose track of the house for my hand, which includes some potential great hands, including a runner-runner straight flush possibility. Unfortunately, too, knowing that the ace of spades isn't in my hand opens up the possibility to some pain. And the under-the-gun guy checks, Mr. Bluetooth checks, and the action is on us.
Oh, man. Well, I'm going to bet. I mean, obviously, we got any queen for the nut straight. Any spade gives us a second nut flush, unless it's a straight flush. But then even then, we have a blocker for that. I'm going to bet.
Seven gives us a straight two.
Yeah, 7-2, that's right. So I was thinking the nut straight, though. But yeah, so we got sevens right. For outs. And I guess that's...
Potential outs, that's, right,
yeah,
outs.
Yeah, so... Okay, I'll bet like 35.
Yeah, actually, we kind of got lucky here, at least for now. We'll see how the hand develops, but I like the spot, right?
Yeah, so. Yeah.
All right, so our hero says, I decide that I want to build a nice juicy pot and want to bring along everyone as a contributor. I'm already thinking this is a double triple up session once I make my flush. In fact, I think I'll need to tell the floor to put me on the PLO waiting list.
Oh, man.
I make a $16.
16 in a $69 pot or whatever it was, $65 pot.
Oh, well, his plan is to bring people along, so
holy
that's his
cow.
Plan, that's gonna work, probably, right?
Holy cow, right now we have nothing. Just that's fine, but I mean, you that's don't want to bring along everyone that can beat you with a pair of eights, you know what I mean? You want to get some people out.
Yeah, I kind of like these kind of flops because it gives you that confidence. Like, you know, when you're in high school, I know you didn't have this problem, but I was a little nerdy guy, right? So didn't like walking up to the girls and asking them to dance, right? But if somebody came over to you and said, hey, I heard her talking in the hallway that she really wants a guy to come up and ask her to dance. Doesn't mean that she's going to say yes to me, right? But it gives me at least a little better feeling that she's open to the idea of dancing with a nerd, right? It's the same thing with his hand, right? You know, we have nothing, you're right. We have King High still. But it gives us a little bit more confidence that we can bet here because of it. And, just like that, I don't want the woman to say, come back. Oh, that girl, come back in about an hour. Maybe I'll tango with you, right?
Nothing like
to say yes right now, right?
Nothing like an indefinite article to give you a little confidence, buddy. Any guy will do. Oh, that's me. I'm going over there.
So the same situation here. I mean, it'd be great to dance with this girl all night, and it'd be nice to, you know, triple up to this hand. But at this point, I'd be happy just winning this pot with King High.
Right.
Right?
Right. I would love to make as much money as possible, but I also don't want to invite as many people as possible, and $16 invites a lot of speculative hands that you really can't narrow down on that turn. So I'd like to bet more than that. I think 16's a mistake. We'll see what happens. I folded preflop, so I'm happy.
That's right. You have no right to any money he wins in
right.
Hand, and you do not have to come out of pocket for anything.
That's exactly right.
All right, Mr. Beret in seat one calls, as does the other gun. Mr. Bluetooth check raises to $48.
All right, I'm just gonna call.
I will argue this is probably the bet we should have made anyhow. Right?
Yeah, so, something.
As long as we make a call here, we don't have to worry about anybody else raising. Then it's probably no different, other than we weren't the aggressor.
Yeah, I think I'll make the call, but I'm kicking myself for not making that bet first, because then this guy, if he wants a check raise now, if we made it 40 or 38 or whatever, I was saying 32, 35, you know, he's going to have to make it 100 and something. Then at that point, you're like, okay, I can make my decision and get away from his hand. Now, you're like, oh, Now it's only, what, 30 more, essentially. You know, and I'm not going to get the nuts unless the Ace of Spades falls. So, you know, whatever. I'm not happy, but I'll call.
All right, I'm going to do that too. Let's see what her hearing is. He says, there I sat trying to range this guy. I glanced at his fingernail-polished, manicured hands, which never seemed to stop texting. My thoughts as follows. Either he flopped a straight Jack Queen, or maybe less likely Jack or Jack 7, or maybe a pair, Jacks, Queens, or Kings, period. If the Queen hits a board, I have him. Hopefully he did have Queens. At least I'd have more than double. When I make the flush, his straight will be worthless. If he has straight cards, I double either way. I quickly make the call, thinking he has no idea what he's up against.
One thing I want to say, but I don't know this hand. I don't have this hand. I don't know anything. The one hand I'd want to be cautioned of here is the suited ace of spades now.
Right.
Because he did raise pre-flop.
And he suited ace king or something, right?
Yeah, and he check raised.
So or not can, ace king.
No, ace, like ace queen of spades.
What's the board now? 8-9? 8-9-10. Yeah, so. Suited ace 10.
Yeah. Right, exactly. It could be ace queen of spades, ace ten of spades, ace anything, really, of spades, because we don't really know this player. But someone who has the nut flush draw and there's a bunch of money in there, and you may have been the kind of person who had the penchant for raising or betting when someone checked to you. So he might know that, and now he's check-raising you to get more money in with the nut flush draw. There's a lot of things that he can have now, now that he's done that. So I just want to make sure he made sure that was clear, that we could kind of narrow his hand now to maybe a nut flush draw or a straight, like he was saying, or even a set. I think he would have bet a set because it's really wet. But check-raising to me seems like, okay, I don't care if I give you this card because my hand is so strong, or the possibility is so strong, that I could have afforded everyone to check behind me and not really worry about it. So
right.
I don't mind calling here, but if that spade falls, it's going to be dicey, I think.
So I guess that's a good question here, is that if we're not excited about making our flush, unless it's the ace of spades, right?
Right.
That takes a big chunk of our hand away, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, we still have the straight possibilities. The king could still be good if we hit it. You never know. This guy could be doing this with, like you said, ace 10 and just have 10s.
Right.
So, I mean, there are some possibilities in there that make it worth the call. And I'm not saying we're 100% on this guy at ace of spades.
Right. But that's the point, something. Though, is I don't know what card we're looking for now.
Yeah.
Because you're right. I think, you know, it seems like it could be top pair flush draw. And if that's the case, then flush isn't going to be good for us.
Right, the only card that's good is
the ace. And we're down to the straight. Now, obviously, we're open-ended on the straight, so we have some options there. So, it's not a terrible hand anymore, right? Because if we take out the flush. But I don't know what I'm hoping for, I guess is what I'm
saying. Right, I'm hoping for a queen. I'm hoping for a queen because we have the nuts, and we're not losing. And then we're hoping for a seven, a queen, or an ace of spades. If a regular spade comes, then we're a little worried. But, right. You know, there's still some cards worthy of making a call here, so I'm going to make the call.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I'm just trying to figure out what I'm looking for.
Yeah.
All right, so our hero says, sure enough, the play anything player in seat one comes along too. The kill better folds, and we go to turn three-handed with $228 American in the pot.
Okay, it's a big pot now.
Turn card is a quote-unquote harmless nine of hearts. So the board now is eight of spades, nine of spades, ten of diamonds, and nine of hearts. Doesn't help me with my king and jack of spades, but given the ranges, any two cards from Mr. Beret in seat one, and queen of spades, king of spades, or the straight cards from Mr. Bluetooth, it's not a bad card. Mr. Bluetooth now first act bets $32.
Well, I'm calling $32. I mean, that's a 10% bet. I mean, not 10%, but it's not a lot.
Yeah, it's a little bit more than 10th of pot, right?
Yeah, it's crazy. So I'll call that. But the thing is, though, is when you say it's harmless, it's not really harmless. It hurts all of our flushes now. Even if the ace spades comes now, you're not guaranteed. This guy could have flopped a set and slow played. I'm not saying he would have.
Flopped a set, which is a very likely holding there, right? I mean, obviously, you're right. It's a little odd that he checked to
check
us.
Raised, check raised. Right.
With a, on that. But also, I mean, here's the other thing, too. While it's a wet board, it's also likely that somebody could have jack queen there, right? So maybe you don't want to get check raised yourself.
Right.
Now, that doesn't really explain why after someone bets, then you check raise, because that's not going to change anything, I guess, right? But,
yeah. I'm going to call because it's so little. You know what I mean? If you did that again, it'd be worth risking $64 to win what ends up being
nothing else, just to figure out what he's holding, right?
Yeah, and then, you know, But I mean, on the end, you can get away from if you don't get your hand either. So it's really going to cost me $32 to see the river.
Yeah, we still don't have anything right now.
Right.
Yeah, so, yeah. All right, Arthur says, now I start to think these guys must not see the obvious straight flush potential, so I shove for my remaining $134 to quote-unquote wake them up.
Shove? How much did we start with?
Well, we had 134 left now after the 48 on the flop and the 16 pre-flops. So
wow. Shove?
56. So we had about 200.
Wow.
Less than 200.
I you got to be so positive that these two guys are going to fold or can't beat you, or that if you make your hand, it's going to be good. I mean, you don't even have like close to the nuts now. If you get it, you have nothing.
Well, my big concern with shoving here is that the guy bet $32.
Yeah.
To me, that's a bet, whereas, hey, I've got you guys dead to rights. I'm just going to try to get anything more out of you that I can, which is probably a reason to fold, but because it's so small in the pot, and that we still have outs, that's the reason we call. But I don't know what's encouraging us to shove here. I mean, I'm making a very passive call here at best.
Yeah, I can't shove there. The only way I shove there is if I was positive that he's done that before, and we know it's because he's afraid.
Well, we got two opponents too,
right? And then we have another opponent. Exactly.
So we gotta know that both of them are doing that, right?
They always say it's hard to ask. It's hard to bluff one person, but it's almost impossible to bluff two. You know, so you really better know what you're doing to shove there. I couldn't shove there. I couldn't. I'd call and see if the guy behind me just calls and hopefully hit my hand. Hope the ace of spades comes and it's good enough.
All right, well, they both instantly call. Of course, that's exactly.
They both instantly come to shove? Oh, man.
We may see. Maybe this is a really wild and crazy game. He says you can almost hear it snap into place. Oh, I'm sorry, hold on. I skipped ahead. They're both instantly called. Within seconds, I see my miracle ace of spades float from the dealer's hand, perfectly fitting into the river position on the board, like the last piece of a puzzle. You can almost hear it snap into place. Sorry, Todd, I ruined your whole story.
Oh, man.
Side action continues between the two of them. But I was so relieved neither of them had the card that could have beat me. I can't for the life of me recall what they bet. Suddenly breaking the silence, Mr. Bluetooth announces full house. The son of a pole dancer at pocket aces all along, giving him aces full of nines. He just bet a little less than I would have. The card that I thought was harmless, the nine of hearts, was actually a tolling of my own death knell. The gentle sound, I imagine, as the ace of spades slid into position on the river, giving me the winning hand, was actually the grinding noise a guillotine blade makes as it drops from high above.
Jeez.
Racing
is,
down as
is he a pilot? Is he an author? What is going on here?
Multi-talented.
Oh, my
God. All of humanity, he says.
Oh, man.
I hardly ever show the hands when I've been beat, but I was so flabbergasted that I flipped over my useless nut flush and Mr. Bray, too, flipped over his hand and offsuit 7-9 that he'd given him. 7-9s, actually.
Trick 9s.
Whole table sighed. Having the second best hand always sucks.
All right, so the ace is check raised. That's an interesting check raise because that's a really wet board. You'd want
a terrible check raise for aces,
exactly.
Isn't it?
You'd think you'd want to thin the field immediately. And then if somebody does something crazy,
what happens when someone shoves there?
Yeah,
you got to call with a pair of aces.
Yeah, no, exactly. Then you fold. So you want to bet something. You check raise, and the guy shoves on you. Now what? You're calling with two overs? You know, an over pair? That's just crazy.
With really no hope of improving.
Yeah.
I mean, it turns out you...
Runner improving, and it did that. Wow.
But really, at that point, yeah. I mean, you're asking a lot from that those last two cards to catch up to somebody that has a flop straight.
And the other guy, too, coming along on a check raise, I mean, I guess the amount that was out there now, he probably needs to call 30 more or whatever, but...
Seven. Well, I mean, he's 7-9, so
he's got the ignorant end.
He's got the open end, so yeah, you're right. Yeah, the jack comes, he's probably not going to be too excited, but...
But then the turn really hooks him.
Right.
You know, I mean, now he's got 3-9s, and he's like, all right, I'm staying in this with 3 of a kind, and wow, that couldn't have played any worse.
You know, I don't know if I'm going to snap call even with his hand at that point, right? Or insta call, whatever he said.
With 3-9s? Yeah, no, I don't know about that.
7-9 at that point, I got to think. I mean, what am I putting people on? One person might be making a move, but
yeah,
not both of them. As it turns out, both of them were.
Yeah.
He had a beat at that point.
Yeah.
But at that point, I got to think somebody has a straight, and now I'm dead to 7 or a 9. And not only is it calling 134 here, it's also I've still got chips live with the other guy.
Yep, yep.
You got to be a river bet, too.
Yeah. He needs a 9 to fall on the river too, to win that hand. Oh, man. Brutal.
Well, 7. Well,
or not
7.
An ace. Yeah,
right.
Not an ace. Anything not an ace.
And that's, again, that's asking a lot of the card gods,
yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah, it's crazy. Jeez. Well, Todd, at least you have a budding career as a writer to help you feel better about losing that pot. That's brutal. All right. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the table.
Ante Up is a production of AnteUpMagazine.com. Contact the show at podcast@anteupmagazine.com or call our hotline at 206-338-6344. If you'd like to advertise, send an email to advertising@anteupmagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.